option outside of Travis Kelce with the Kansas City Chiefs, looking more and more like it. Talk about that as we move forward, as we get you going on this Tuesday night, and it's going to be a good time. Rod Babers will join us. He is CJ Vogel, back from a road trip to Temple. You've been putting the miles in, CJ. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm glad there's no traffic tonight out there. And William Nish, I was just in your backyard. I was up there at Colleen Shoemaker earlier this afternoon, and then made it over to Temple for a little spring practices from both schools. A lot of 2026 prospects that we'll talk about a little bit later on. But good to see some of these coaches out on the road. Of course, you never know who you'll see out there. I saw a lot over at Shoemaker, a couple over at Temple as well. So we'll get into that. I know Texas coaches are out on the road today as well. And, of course, Jerry is out on the road out in Florida. So spring football is not slowing down for anybody right now.
Yeah, no question. May is busy as any. And we know for Sark, he talked about how it's his most worrisome month because the players are home or doing whatever they're doing for a month off before they report back after Memorial Day into June, and then it's on. But, you know, but as far as the coaches go, they really don't get a break at this point as they crank this thing up. But what did you learn as you were in Killeen, Temple, that whole area? I mean, obviously the entire I-35 corridor all up into that area booming. The high school's getting bigger, more and more prospects. We see it all over Central Texas. Is that also true up into the Belton, Temple, Killeen area?
Yeah, there's a really, really good crop of prospects in that Central Texas area. There's an offensive lineman, Todd Pless, out of Colleen Shoemaker, who's got a real good chance. He has five or six offers at the moment. You know, North Texas, UTSA, Baylor, Texas Tech, some really, really intriguing options at the moment. Got to watch him. He's about 6'5", plays right tackle, looks good, and run fits as well. Liked what I saw. And then Brendan Logan, a cornerback out of Colleen Shoemaker as well, impressed me very much today. I actually will be able to post a couple updates and stuff like that this weekend from our trips across the state this week. I got a couple more stops tomorrow, and then, of course, going into the weekend. And then out at Temple, two big 2026 kids as well, Jamarion Carlton, the defensive end, 6'5", 84-inch wingspan. Really impressive kid. Syracuse, UTEP, the two last to offer him. He's up to 12 offers. Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, Baylor. You'll hear a lot of those schools early on in a lot of these recruitments. And then, Rod, I know I got to get you on this film, but Jason Bradford visited Texas for the spring game here recently. 6'3 cornerback. I saw him in practice in one-on-ones and 7-on-7 here today. That kid is up in the conversation for the best defensive back in his classification. He has three offers at the moment. I would not be shocked to see that list quickly grow as the spring progresses. That kid looked really impressive today. I loved what I saw, and of course was just on campus, got to talk with Terry Joseph and a few other coaches on the visit today. Looking forward to seeing how well that recruitment gets off the ground, because it would not surprise me to see that thing really start to skyrocket here in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, you'll see here, Rod, 6'3", plays line scrimmage, very physical, very lengthy. Has a great wingspan. I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah, Texas trying to get longer, right? They want more wingspan. They want more arm length. They want more I think overall just a larger frame at corner. I think Malik Muhammad's trending toward that. I think the guys they're bringing in, Kobe Black, is trending toward that. I think ultimately that's what they want. 6'3", though, that is exceptionally a large frame for a cornerback. But it all depends on how those guys move. It looks like he's got pretty good movement for a guy that size. I mean, Ryan Watts was essentially 6'3", and we were all really pleasantly surprised by his change of direction numbers when he was testing at the combine. I mean, so, you know, if this young man can, and I think they might be trying to get away from boundary and field, but if he, you know, obviously comes to Texas, he would be the prototypical boundary corner for them, just like Ryan Watts was at Texas too. So I like his frame, though, and I like the way he moves at corner.
That Ryan Watts comparison, I mean, almost a spitting image. He trains with Bernard Blake down here in the Austin area, so BAM Performance should be a familiar name. He's also the architect behind Jahdae Barron, Andrew Makuba, Michael Taft, anybody who's been a defensive back in the Austin area, the Central Texas area, and they've worked with Bernard Blake over at BAM Performance. They've turned out to be a pretty good DB. That's where he's at right now. I mentioned Brendan Logan, the 26th corner over at Killeen Shoemaker as well. He's also with BAM as well. So two really good Central Texas cornerback prospects, and two that I think Texas will eventually get involved with, more so Jason Bradford, because like you said, that length, that speed, the arm reach, really impressive stuff early on.
Yeah, remember that Takario Davis, right? Isn't he like a 6'3 corner out of Arizona, the one they wanted in the transfer portal but ended up staying at Arizona? And that guy's projected, I believe, to be a first-round corner. It's rare. I mean, I remember I was at K-State with Julius Brinks at K-State. He's a really good player.
Yep.
Remember him? He was about 6'2", 6'3". It's rare to find guys who have nice, flexible hips, who have, you know, really good feet at that kind of size. And it looks like this young man really kind of fits the bill.
Well, and he's only going to be a junior, right? I mean, he's class of 2026. So just watching the film, he's bigger than the linebacker. So clearly he wants to be a DB, right? A lot of times you'd have a guy like that's that size, only coming out, you know, as a sophomore. You might have a tendency to move into a different position. But clearly he wants to play defensive back at 6'3 and 210 right now with two more years to go.
No, that's good. Listen, that's not – CJ, we talked about this. Not enough guys that size, that height, with that kind of frame, with that skill set, want to play defense these days. They want to play offense usually.
Yeah.
They want to play receiver. They want to score touchdowns. Nick Saban has talked about this. I've actually talked to Bam Performance about this. I talked to Bernard Blake about it too when we interviewed him. You know, it's just really tough to get those really – really good-looking athletes who have the raw materials, like the young man you just mentioned, Jason Bradford, to want to play defense, to have the enthusiasm, the attitude to play defense. If he does, I mean, you can make a lot of money. You can make a lot of money with that frame on that side of the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
supply and demand, right? There's more guys who want to be a wide receiver and catch touchdowns than want to play corner.
Come on now. Come on now. It's the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you become kind of a dime a dozen if you move to receiver. You can be a unicorn if you stay at defensive back.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that. That's very smart. Out of Temple, Texas, he's got 2 years to go and a lot to do right there with defensive backs. Speaking of defensive backs in the portal, the news that's come down here in the last 30 minutes or so, another Longhorn has found a new home. Of course, 21 Longhorns into the portal. Austin Jordan staying back close to home. He's from Denton Ryan. He got into the portal, of course, one of the 21 Longhorns, and has picked TCU for his landing spot. I guess if my math is correct on this, Austin Jordan going to TCU, kind of going back home, which is really cool for him. You know, and I want your thoughts on that, Rod. But for you, CJ, I mean, you got, 21 players into the portal since the end of the year. I think it's now 9 that have, as you could call it, Rod, the healthy attrition, 9 have landed back in the Power 5, 8 have gone Group of 5, and there's still – you know, 4 or 5 guys that are still not committed, including Terrence Brooks, but Austin Jordan going back, play for Sonny Dykes, closer to his high school there in Denton. I think that's a real nice fit for him.
I love the fit. And TCU was a school that was very heavily involved in his high school recruitment of Denton Ryan. I remember it came down to Texas and Oklahoma at the end, but TCU was probably that third school that finished for Austin Jordan. Gets to return back to the DFW area as well. Of course, he has connections to that program already. A couple former teammates already on the roster. And TCU loves what the prospect is. I think what they see in Austin Jordan is an outside cornerback that can run straight line. I think that was something that Texas that they appreciated about Austin Jordan was the straight line speed more so than the cutting ability or the agility more so. And, you know, kind of the side to side diagonal directions, which at cornerback, specifically at the star, you need to have a lot of, and we see it with Jalen Gilbo and Jahdae Barron, excuse me. But Austin Jordan going back up to TCU, that's a great landing spot. TCU's returning to being a big threat in the DFW area. You'll see them kind of pick and choose a couple big-time prospects each year. But, of course, Texas doing a great job being the big dog in what is right now the biggest, hottest area in the state of Texas.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, the DFW area is crazy. I mean, it's look at metro areas. It's probably only Atlanta produces more NFL talent right now than DFW. I like to see it. You know, I've been trying to do my best to kind of track the attrition at Texas. I think everybody's going to have attrition. There's unhealthy attrition and healthy attrition. I think it's tougher to define these days. But if you have guys who are leaving your roster and going to other Power 5 programs who are on your competitive level, I think that's good attrition. I think that's healthy attrition, number one. Now, this is kind of like I always say that keeping up with the transfer portal departures is like keeping up with your exes, right? There's a great, I was reading a study about Facebook, and it says that 88% of people on Facebook, they check on their exes on Facebook. You ain't got to admit that's you or not. My point is this. Don't cyberstalk your exes, but check up on them. And checking up on them, oftentimes, it reflects on you, right? If your exes are doing well. Same thing with your transfer portal departures. I think if their transfer departures are doing well, if they go to other Power 5 programs, end up contributing or starting for those programs, that reflects well on you. Now, it only reflects well on you if you're doing good. Right, if Texas is winning, if Texas is losing, then you losing guys and them contributing and playing for other programs, that does not reflect well on you because you're losing players that you could actually use in your program to help you. But Texas is doing really well. They're winning a lot of games. They're playing, but competing at a championship level. And these guys are leaving the program. They're leaving because they don't have a path to play. You've lost, I think, maybe two starters out of those 21 guys that you mentioned. Jaren Thompson was a starter for you, Terrence Brooks. But even Jaren Thompson, they recruited past him, right? They brought in Derek Williams, who's about to ascend. They brought in Makuba, who is a seasoned veteran at the Power 5 level as a playmaker, going to play in the NFL. So they recruited over him. So the only one of those departures that really is a bit bewildering and perplexing is the Terrence Brooks one. All the rest of them, those guys just didn't have a path to play. And if they end up going to another program and playing at another program, to me, that's really healthy attrition. It says a lot about the health of your overall roster that they couldn't find a path to play at Texas. You're still upgrading at that specific position, and they can go to another Power 5 university and contribute, potentially be a starter there. Reflects really well. That's why Malik Murphy, if he wins the Duke starting quarterback job, that reflects really well on the Texas quarterback position overall. Didn't have a path to play, contributed a little bit, went somewhere else and started for them, and yet you're still at Texas. You might have the best quarterback room. You do have the best quarterback room in the country, and that's healthy attrition out of your room. It's like good cholesterol, right? Sounds like it's going to be bad, but it's good. So I think that ultimately for Texas, you got to keep up with these guys as they leave the, you know, leave the program and what they do 2-3 years later. But I think ultimately, you know, kind of like checking up on your exes, don't cyberstalk them. That's creepy. But checking up on them, it reflects well on you if they're doing well. And I think for Texas right now, a lot of these guys, what, close to 40% of them going to a Power 5 program, that's a really healthy attrition number for me in pattern and trend.
Yeah, with Austin Jordan, that's 9. Peyton Kirkland's going to Colorado. Zach Swanson to Arizona State. Billy Walton to SMU. Malik Murphy, as you mentioned, to Duke. Isaiah Nayers at Nebraska. Trill Carter, Jaren Thompson at Auburn. Yep. Those guys are going to play. And I, you know, to the healthy attrition, the you know, conversation, CJ, you look at Peyton Kirkland on the offensive line, speaking of deep positions, what was he running, third team at Texas? He's probably going to start Colorado. I mean, he's going to, for Deion Sanders, he's probably going to start there.
Well, I mean, they've added about 35 guys to that Colorado roster so far. So, I mean, that room, that whole locker room is brand new, basically. Of course, adding to whatever high school kids they added as well. But for Peyton Kirkland specifically, who is running, you know, almost firmly with the third unit this year, he was sparingly off, he was often on the backfield getting work with the training staff as well. So he wasn't entirely healthy during his time in Austin. I know he got dinged up. He had a knee injury sometime in the middle of last year as well. But hey, he found a new home. And Rob, to your point, if you're going P5 to P5, it often means that your exes are doing well, even if they're not still living in Texas. So that's
good. Nice. Well done, brother. Good stuff. Well, good stuff.
And, you know, a lot of the guys that have gone from P5 down to group of five were, you know, Tom Herman recruits, previous staff, the Charles Wrights, Casey Kane, Sawyer Gorham Welsh, you know, Larry Turner Gooden. I guess that was a Sark recruit. Mm-hmm. B.J. Allen, Xavion Bryce, Keaton Crawford have all gone group of five. The other guys I mentioned are now going to group, you know, Power 5 conference. And then the guys who have not found a new home yet, Xavion Red, Samaje Burrell, Terrence Brooks, and Christopher Ross have yet to land. So, but it is healthy. I mean, because, again, if 21 are moving into the portal, but they're all landing and weren't going to really be an impactful part of your depth chart this year, exactly. And you can run in 9 of your own commitments or portal players who all of them will be either starters or, you know, high up on the 2-deep rotational players at wide receiver, tight end, defensive tackle. You know, that's good work in the portal, I think, for Sark. You know, 9 in, 21 out. But obviously, you know, that 12-player difference is made up with another top 3 recruiting class that's coming in with 17 early enrollees, and then, you know, the 6 or 7 that are going to come in for the summertime. Healthy attrition and healthy roster development and growth. safe to say. CJ, is it, you know, as we talk about, you know, the kid from Javion Cole from San Jose State coming in as the last portal commitment, do you think that's the last one? Do we think we're, if you're a Texas fan, is that the last addition to the roster outside of the freshman this summer that you're going to see, or is there still a chance that there can be another addition?
I think there's still another addition out there, and I think it'll be somewhere in that front seven. I look towards the defensive line. I know there aren't many options out there available for you. I won't get too deep into where they're headed on the defensive line, but I do know they are still looking for options, even with Bill Norton and Tia Savea on campus. Right now, I do think Texas is doing some work behind the scenes to get another guy into the class on the defensive line and kind of shore up that room. They've done a good job, and I think especially with what Alex January and Sidiri Mitchell have shown so far through spring ball, you know, Aaron Bryant's taking a step up. The big question is, will there be enough bodies for next year, or are you going to be in the same spot again? Because if you look at it, I mean, I don't want to get too far ahead, but 2025, Alfred Collins leaves, Vernon Broughton leaves, Tia Savea's gone, Bill Norton departs. Now you're in a similar spot where you're looking around thinking, all right, who's going to be our bodies? Will we have enough depth at this spot, which is never going to be any less important in the SEC? So I don't know exactly if it's a done deal anywhere or what's going on with the defensive line specifically, but I do think that there is going to be another addition somewhere amongst this group before the fall comes back around and we see these guys back on the field.
And maybe, you know, does it sound like maybe a younger guy, CJ? Like maybe one that could be in the program for a few years that maybe is not an immediate impact, but someone that brings a number.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And you don't see it too often with Texas going out there and adding true depth pieces. I think Kendrick Blackshear was really the only one guy that you could point to and say, yeah, not a guy that's going to give you anywhere from 40 to 50 snaps on a given basis. Of course, depending on where they are positionally, but he's probably the one guy that was a true two deep guy. You know, Isaiah Bond, Amari Nyblack, Trey Moore, Makuba. I could go on and on and on about the portal additions. They're all going to be frontline contributors at some point this year for the Longhorns. Now I'm kind of looking at it like it would make sense to get a depth piece, a guy that you could develop behind the scenes for a year and then still have a guy who's in this room for, I don't know, two or three potential years, even after 2024.
Big humans. You can never have enough of them on the offensive and defensive line. And that's a great point, Rod, about, okay, you feel pretty good about where you are now, even though you didn't get Dominic Williams, the TCU transfer, still have added Tia Savea, still have added Bill Norton to what you've already got, but four of those guys are going to move on again. And this is, you constantly have to be upgrading that position. And as you've talked about the age factor, you almost rather get an older guy that maybe has been in the college weight room for at least a couple of years to add to the piece, especially moving to the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah, because that's one of those positions, right? It's more developmental. Very rarely do you get a guy coming out of high school who's ready to dominate. Dominic Williams is one of those guys, right? Yeah. Freshman All-American at D-tackle. But that's rare. You get a guy right out of high school ready to really play and compete and be capable at that level. Usually, you know, a year in the weight room, a year with, you know, strength and conditioning and a nutritionist and a dietitian at the highest level. So for Texas, yeah, I mean, if you're Sark, and thank God for the transfer portal, you need a short-term plan and you need a long-term plan at D-tackle right now. And I've been saying this for the last year. It's a premium position now. It is. Now I think everybody agrees with that. I've been saying it for like a couple of years. You know, DC, it is a premium position, okay? Yeah. At the NFL level, go look at the highest-paid NFL defenders. Half of them are interior D-linemen. And at the college level now, because NIL and transfer portal. If you're a D tackle, they're just so rare to have an impact three down D tackle these days, man. They're rare. Usually those guys you moneyball them. They're either good run defenders or then situations you can put guys in as pass rushers. Have a three down guy is tough. And for Texas, how many three down interior D linemen do they have? Right. I mean, that's the thing about it is, do you think Bill Norton and Savea can also rush the passer? I think they're pretty stout run defenders, but can they be game-changing pass rushers? I think Alfred Collins can be an elite pass rusher, at D tackle. Elite. That's what some of the numbers say. And the film suggests as well. But you got to win the rundowns to get in a position to rush the passer. Right? Otherwise, he's just running down your damn throat and run power all damn day. So that's Alfred Collins' issue. It's like, okay, well, big man, I know you can rush the passer, but can you deal with this power and these gap schemes we're about to run at you? That's his issue. So Vernon Broughton, I wonder, you know, he's probably closer to being a better run stopper than a pass rusher. But last year you had two that were top five at both. You had the best run stopping interior D lineman in the country in C Sweat. You had the best pass rushing interior D lineman in Byron Murphy. And then both of them were both basically top five in both categories. Unbelievable. So I agree with CJ. It's something to be for Sark to prioritize. There's no question. A long-term strategy. And thank God for the transfer portal. You can have a short-term strategy. But just like the Dominique Williams things, you ain't going to always win in the transfer portal. Thank God you had the Johnny Nansen connection. If not for Johnny Nansen, where the hell would you be? That was a hell. That hire is already paying huge dividends, guys. You picked up two interior D linemen at probably your most vulnerable position on the roster. And they have a Johnny Nansen connection. So shout out to Johnny Nansen. But, yeah, man, I think Sark needs to be – He needs to be really, really deliberate in the way he builds that position. It seems like out of all the positions out there, like quarterback, that's one that seems very now rare in terms of the skill set that you need to be an every down player at that position.
Yeah, that's well said by both of you guys for sure. And Byron Murphy, you know, I know he was the 16th pick in the draft, but he was the second defensive player taken. I mean, that's a top 10 pick right there. Those guys are hard to find. CJ, when you look at the recruiting board for 20 and 25, what does the defensive tackle position look like? I know the other part of that is Kenny Baker is new to that spot. I think everybody's excited about it. But, you know, you lose Bo Davis. You got to attack that at the high school level, too, for Rod's point of the long-term plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And right now, I think there's only one real guy inside the state of Texas that the staff really likes. And that's a bit surprising, but at the same time, it's not, because you've seen the staff go out west to California to get wide receivers. You've seen them go down to Florida to get running backs, Louisiana for a couple DBs. Now they're going to start hitting Georgia pretty hard. They're going to start hitting Alabama. They're going to start hitting the deep, deep South, where these guys seemingly grow on trees. And I know Jerry's out in the deep South right now, and he was at a track meet the other day basically saying, yeah, there's guys out here running 10.8, 10.9 at 215 pounds that have no offers. It's crazy how deep and athletic and talented some of those kids are in that area, the Georgias, your Mississippis, down into Florida. But Texas is making big-time moves in that interior defensive line spot for the class of 2025. You look at Derry Norris, Myron Charles, Malik Autry, who's committed to Auburn at the moment. All of these guys, Texas is starting to get on campus, starting to get official visits set up. Of course, Josiah Sharma out of Folsom, California as well in the mix. The biggest thing is holding on to Brandon Brown, and that's going to be a fight all the way through. But he's a true 6'1 guy. He's a guy that, I mean, committed early, committed to Bo Davis, but he did make a trip down to Austin with his mother in 7-on-7 team early in the spring to get an idea of what the campus was like. He wanted to see DKR and kind of the big lights on campus. If Texas can hold on to him and then add to that group, I think Texas is going to kind of flip this defensive line spot on its head, but it all starts with who they're able to get onto campus from that defensive or from that deep South group on the defensive line.
Interesting. And you mentioned big lights. Let me tell you about Texas Electricity Ratings, bringing you the Tuesday live stream as usual. Appreciate them. For those of y'all sitting and living and watching our broadcast tonight and all the shows here on Texas football, and you're in a deregulated area of the great state, Dallas, Houston, you understand the deregulated electricity market can be very confusing. That's where Texas Electricity Ratings comes in. It's a shopping website that allows you to compare prices, read customer reviews from people like you who are already locked in, and you find good electricity that fits your needs. It's you want the one that fits what you're needing and what's going to be bright for your family. It also filters out a lot of gimmicky plans on websites like Power to Choose that trick customers into expensive bills. So if you're in the market for a new electricity plan, shop TexasElectricityRatings.com. That's TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF. Slash OTF for all of your electricity needs. And Hook'em, great and proud partners of ours here on the On Texas Football Channel. And speaking of that electricity, deregulated areas, all the folks there in East Texas dealing with the flooding and seeing that through Conroe and Kingwood, all through that I-40 or got I-59 area. Thinking about you tonight. Hope everybody's making it through that here on the On Texas Football Channel. Some dramatic flooding through the San Jacinto River, Lake Conroe, that whole area. I know a lot of folks view it and watch us, of our over 45,000 subscribers now, which is incredible. Hope you guys are doing okay. Here's Brandon with a super chat on a Tuesday night. Says, we keep saying that we think Quinn is going to step up this season and how he needs to take control. But what does that actually look like? That's a good pivot and good conversation. You know, we've talked about the pressure, the spotlight on Quinn Ewers into year three. What does that actually look like for you, Rod Babers?
Yeah, there are a couple of things there. I think one of them for Quinn, for me, it would be the way he handles pressure, the pocket science, becoming a better pocket scientist, if that makes any sense. The way he maneuvers in the pocket, creating space and be able to buy himself extra time. If you go look at pressure to sack percentage in his career, and like I said, you go look at a lot of quarterbacks, this is a stat that usually translates from college to the NFL. But Quinn Ewers had in 2022, 13.9% pressure to sack percentage, which is actually that's really good. That's actually good for a young guy. But in 2023, that number jumped to 25.2%. He didn't handle pressure as well. So that's something he regressed in terms of handling pressure. As we noticed, what did he do in 2023 more than he did in 2022? He just ran, just scrambled. So for the scouts watching, they're like, okay, yeah, the stats may say you handle the pressure better, but did you just decide, you know what, I'm just going to scramble. Instead of getting through progressions, instead of working in the pocket, instead of, you know, getting deep into the progressions, buying yourself time, creating space in the pocket, becoming the pocket scientist, you basically decided, you know what, when the pressure gets there, I'm scrambling. It worked for him, by the way. It was good. I was a better alternative than taking sacks. But I think that's what he did to kind of avoid some negative plays, but it still didn't work. His pressure to sack percentage, it just increased. I think NFL scouts want to see that regress back to the mean, because right now that's pretty high for a quarterback. And if it jumps even higher, then the knock will be that he doesn't handle pressure really well. Well, from what I think, from watching Quinn, I think he stares at pressure. I think he looks at it. Most great quarterbacks feel pressure. Remember Michael Penix is a prime example. Longhorn fans remember watching him. Remember watching him feel the pressure in the pocket? He wasn't looking at it. He was feeling it. Now, that there's a lot of things that go into that. That's in your periphery. That's knowing where the pressure is coming from. That's part of pass protection. That pass protection is knowing, all right, the pressure is going to be coming from here. I'm responsible for that guy. Or knowing where the dogs are, knowing where the war daddies are on the opposing D-line. Like, all right, you got Aaron Donald. You know, all right, it's a good chance. They're not going to block him for more than a second and a half. I know where the pressure's coming from. That's part of the pocket science and being a pocket scientist. So for Quinn, I do think it's going to be important for him to be able to identify the pressure better and handle the pressure better. And whether it be evaded, feeling the pressure, not seeing it, because when he stares at it, he either has a scramble or he's going to take a sack, a self-sack. That's what he does. But I need him to evade the pressure and be able to, you know, buy himself more time. That's one thing. The deep ball is another thing. But I think the deep ball actually is going to work itself out. He's actually has improved in the deep ball in his last 8 games or so. His deep ball has gotten better. That's been documented statistically. So I think that's a big part of it. And he got to put the cape on, right? You want to be the number one quarterback drafted overall. You want to be, you know, the top quarterback in his class. You want to go to New York for the Heisman. You got to put the cape on a few times, show everybody you Superman. We saw with Caleb Williams when he was a freshman. You ain't got to be a seasoned veteran to put the cape on. Hell, Texas were playing Oklahoma, and it was up by 3 touchdowns, and that dude put the cape on and brought him all the way back. So he's got to do that a few times on big stage. He's got plenty of them. He's got Michigan. He's got Georgia. You got Oklahoma. You got the A&M game. Those are huge stages. And we've seen him put the cape on a few times. I just need to see him do it more consistently, and that's what scouts want to see. And when they see him do that, they also want to see what type of leader he's going to be, because this is Quinn's team. So that's what it looks like to me, putting the cape on, better deep ball accuracy, and handling the pressure better, feeling it, not necessarily seeing it.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rod. I think that Sark understanding the quarterback position last year, it was take off and run if it's not there on the first or first and a half progression, or just take the sack. You know, don't turn the ball over. Don't make a dumb negative play or a turnover. We'll go ahead and take the negative play, or at least minimize the damage at that point. I think that's the next regression. But CJ, I also think, you know, to the super chat conversation, it probably starts right here in June when everybody gets back, of leading this team. like taking control of this team and being that guy, building chemistry with the new receiver core and being the leader of the team, making sure that it's his and everybody understands that. I think that's the consensus. But at the same time, during this summer workouts, you know, June, July, into fall camp in August, make sure everyone understands whose team this is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think last year we saw the supporting cast uplift Quinn at times, you know, whether it be Xavier Worthy, JT, AD, whoever it was. Now, to your point, Rod, it's all about Quinn uplifting this new group of guys, because that's going to be the case in the NFL. You're not going to have the same supporting cast year in, year out, no matter what. You probably have the same core at times. Maybe you get a big addition from free agency, but there's going to be a revolving door wherever you are in the NFL. And I think a lot of times, if you're an NFL scout, you want to see quarterbacks succeed with different playmakers, with different seasons year after year. And this will be a good test for him. I think this will be a good opportunity for Quinn. Three brand new pass catchers, a new tight end, along with Gunnar Helm stepping into a bigger role. Does he elevate their play the way in which we saw those guys a year ago help elevate Quinn? And I know I've brought it up a lot, but only having one touchdown pass in six games last year, that's where I want to see him improve. That shouldn't be the case with all of these weapons, all of these big-time guys on the outside right now for Quinn. It should all about be scoring a lot of points and him being the catalyst, the engine behind the scenes. I think he will make that step, but there's pieces to that game I'd like to see kind of refined a bit as well.
Yeah, good stuff. And, Rod, we see that, and it's a good parallel to the NFL, Rod, where – you know, with a young quarterback like we're seeing with Caleb Williams in Chicago or C.J. Stroud in Houston, you know, when you're a young quarterback, you put weapons around him to make sure he's supported. But once he gets paid, once he gets the mega deal, then you're going to probably get rid of those expensive receivers, and then the quarterback has to elevate those receivers. Patrick Mahomes has done it in Kansas City. Josh Allen's now being asked to do it. Probably next year Joe Burrow is going to be asked to do it in Cincinnati. It's just part of the deal. Now, once you get paid, once you get that big contract, we need you to elevate our receiver core. We can't afford to do the alternative. That's kind of where Quinn is. Time for you to elevate everybody on this offense.
Yeah, and he knows his offense now intimately, right? I remember, you know, Tom Herman once telling me once after Sam Ehlinger's third year as a starter or competing as a starter and as a starter, that he knew the offense as well as he did. He knew the offense better than Tom Herman. He would tell Tom Herman little anecdotal things about the offense or suggest certain things that Tom Herman said he didn't think about with the offense. He knew it so well. I hope Quinn is at that point now where he has a conversation with Sark about the offense, because they both have such intimate knowledge of it. And that he can, and Sark always talks about how he builds the offense around the comforts, really kind of the comfort zone of his QBs. And man, Quinn Ewers should be really comfortable in that offense. The only thing that could throw it off, the only thing, would be chemistry with new wide receivers. And that's on Quinn, because a lot of that work, in my opinion, can be done in the offseason. That's timing, that's rhythm, that's knowing how your quarterback wants you to run certain routes. What your quarterback is looking at prior to the snap, if you know where he's going to throw it based on the leverage of the defensive back. Those are all little small, you know, subtle details, but important details and nuances that you can get out of the way and you can actually get the upper hand on and advantage on in the offseason. So that work's got to be done. I mean, there shouldn't be a day where Quinn's not throwing with them damn wide receivers, honestly. Considering I knew that, there shouldn't be a day that goes by in the offseason where at least with one group, you can't do everybody. Everybody's got stuff to do. But that because you got so many guys, you're going to have five, six guys in that circle of trust. Every damn day Quinn should be out, because that quarterback throw every day. I ain't knowing the quarterback anything. I got to go out there and throw. There's cycles about it. I got to go throw a little bit, man. I ain't throwing today. I got to throw a little bit. Maybe Johnny Manziel wasn't like that. Every other quarterback I know, they got to get some throws in. And when you don't throws in, it should be to those wide receivers. Like, hey, man, I'm out there at 6. I'll be out there for an hour and a half. I need you to come out there for 35 minutes to get some of these routes in. Like, boom, every day with those guys. It's a reason the quarterbacks get the keys to the facilities, ladies and gentlemen. They can go there anytime to the practice field. They can open up the practice field, turn the lights, whatever the hell they want to. All right? They can do that. They're the only ones who get the keys. Nobody else gets them but the QBs. And Quinn's got them, so he should use them. They should be out there all the time. Y'all should be driving by. They'd be like, hey, somebody out there on the practice field. It should be Quinn. And the wide receivers out there getting the work in.
Nice. Thanks for the super chat. If you have them, certainly send them in here on the On Texas Football Channel, brought to you by Texas Electricity Ratings. And good conversation. Quinn Ewers really needs to grab the reins of this football team, because the expectations high, sky the limit for this Longhorn football team. Real quick, guys, because they're in addition to the Austin Jordan news that broke ahead of our conversation tonight, also news that Rashee Rice, the Kansas City Chiefs receiver, not having a good offseason. It's almost like in one couple of months period, he's trying to play himself out of the NFL. We know about the incident with the drag racing and the car wreck up there in North Dallas back early April. Now a report from out of the Metroplex that he maybe assaulted a Dallas police officer or someone. No, according to DPD, assaulted a photographer. He's trying to take a picture of him. Yeah. I apologize. That was from the DPD. Assaulted a photographer. Trying to snap a photo of him. So that investigation is ongoing. When you think about this, is it relating to the young guy, Rashee Rice out of SMU, who really became their number one receiver outside of Travis Kelce on their run to the Super Bowl? Is there any doubt that Xavier Worthy has landed in the perfect spot for Xavier Worthy and maybe the Chiefs? Is there a Texas draft pick of the 11 that landed in a better spot?
It's hard to find one if there's another one, Rod. I mean... I think even with Rashee Rice, it was Xavier Worthy who was in the best spot. We've seen the Chiefs win without wide receivers, but we've seen them even be better with big, speedy, fast guys that make plays down the field, which is exactly what Xavier Worthy is. You know, that's kind of the identity of his game, is a guy that will burn you on the field, the fastest 40 of all time. He's a perfect fit for Patrick Mahomes, who, if you give him time to scramble, he's going to find a guy down the field. And I hope that's worked on this year, whether it be in the summer in these OTAs, if it's in, you know, training camp, whatever it is, just allowing Xavier Worthy to go 30 yards down the field, Mahomes roll out and say, all right, where are you going if I'm going this way? If I'm down the field and you're rolling out, how do you want me to play? Just get on the same page that way, because we saw Tyreek Hill probably add 500 yards in a single season off of doing that alone. So I love it. And now with the extra, you know, necessity for receivers, I know they added Marquise Brown, but you're also taking away Rashee Rice for half the season and potentially more. It feels like it's going to be a tremendous opportunity for Xavier Worthy to get off to a very hot start in his NFL career, which, Rod, we talked about it earlier. We haven't seen Texas wide receivers necessarily light it up in the NFL. We've seen some running backs. We know DBs have had a good run. Every now and then you'll see Omenihu and Osai make big plays in big games. But now it's time for those wide receivers. And now that there's going to be a lot of them in the league entering over the next couple of years, it's going to start with AD and Xavier Worthy really making those plays down the field. And I think it's going to be a lot of Xavier Worthy in year one.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for Rashee Rice. I'm not going to lie to you. I feel bad for him. He's obviously making terrible decisions and compounding bad decisions by making even worse decisions. And yes, not only is Xavier Worthy in the most ideal situation of any of the Longhorns drafted guys, I would make the argument that of every player drafted in the NFL, drafted and undrafted, all seven rounds, that no player is in a better ideal situation than Xavier Worthy. Not one player drafted in the league is in a better position. He's a wide receiver with the best quarterback in the league, all right, who, by the way, was quarterbacked his team to a Super Bowl championship with the worst wide receiving core in the league last year, all right? And he comes in there with the best QB in the league, who is thirsty for a really good wide receiver to throw the ball to, the best play-calling head coach in the NFL, offensive mind in Andy Reid, too. And he doesn't even have to have the burden of being the number one receiver, because that's Travis Kelce. So he won't get double teamed on every damn play. That's Travis Kelce's getting double teamed and triple teamed on every play, because everybody knows he's the number one receiver for Patrick Mahomes, guys. And so, and by the way, his speed is going to be ideal for Patrick Mahomes. I brought this stat up many times, so now everybody's heard it, I'm sure. But Patrick Mahomes' average touchdown pass last year, guys, was under 4 yards. It was 3.9 yards. His average touchdown pass in 2019 was 17 yards. So he is, he's been, his game has been castrated a little bit in terms of being able to take the top off of defense, the verticality within that Andy Reid offense. They've basically been winning Super Bowls with a short to intermediate passing game. Now they're about to truly add another vertical threat like they'd have in Tyreek Hill. So now you're about to see a three-level passing game from Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, and that's scary. They'll have the short to intermediate. They can work that with anybody. That's short, quick game. But Travis Kelce's going to work that with the intermediary. And now you got to cover the deep ball with Hollywood Brown, 4-2-7 on one side, and then Xavier Worthy, a 4-2 flat on the other side. I don't really know how you defend that. And if anything, you'll give up the run with a light box. If you do that, they'll just hand the damn ball off, and Pacheco will beat you with the depth of 1,000 cuts. I mean, that Dolphins right now is looking – dangerous, lethal.
Yeah. Isaiah Pacheco could be a great draft pick in your fantasy football league. Name. because he's the third year back now playing for a next contract. And I think you'll see more and more of that. You're right about that, Rod, the ability to stretch that field and the ability to, Xavier Worthy at 165, 170 pounds, but the motions, the fly motion, those things are going to be utilized to put the pressure on defenses. And Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid have already shown the ability to navigate around a dink and dunk offense where they need to. Oh, yeah, by the way, their defense is elite now, too.
Exactly. Best DC, best defensive coordinator in the league, too. E, you're right.
So I agree. And I want to play this for y'all because I also think, as far as, we talk about position players and skill guys that can make an impact. We know Byron Murphy's going to be a stud in Seattle. Devondre Sweat in Tennessee, trying to, be the starting nose guard there potentially. But I wanted to play this from the new Carolina head coach, Dave Canales. He was talking about Jonathan Brooks and the ability to get Jonathan Brooks into that system. Remember, Dave Canales was in Seattle with Geno Smith and helped oversee the resurrection of his career. He had his best year. Then last year in Tampa, he was with Baker Mayfield, who all of a sudden turned into, all pro and got a new contract. And now it's his job is to bring Bryce Young along. But if you know those two storylines in Seattle and in Carolina, it was running the football. It was getting your running game involved to give your quarterback better opportunities with play action. Listen to Dave Canales, the new head coach of the Panthers, talking about the ability to draft Jonathan Brooks in the second round.
Versatility, first and foremost. Our system calls for a back that could be used, of course, just in a traditional way, hand it to him. Then how can we get this player in space, being able to get him in perimeter screens, checkdowns. We got a really cool empty package where we use the backs, flex them out to get matchups, things like that. He's a bigger back. He's got range. There's so much that he brings from a versatility standpoint. That's probably the biggest thing that stood out. And then just vision, patience, contact balance, acceleration. Like, he's got it all. He's the best back in this class. And we were so fired up to just be able to bring him in and create that competition that Dan talked about.
There's another guy, guys. If the health is right and the knee recovers properly, they're gonna put him on a pitch count in the spring, training camp. But by October, could we see, Chuba Hubbard, Dante Foreman? They're not Jonathan Brooks. You wonder if Jonathan Brooks can be a guy we're talking about having a really impactful rookie year in Carolina, where they're dying for weapons around their young quarterback.
Hey, best friend of a quarterback is a good run game and a tight end. So. Right now, it's a great opportunity for both Longhorns to make instant impacts and kind of help Bryce Young bounce back from what was a really bad rookie campaign. I know that offensive line was a mess. They went out and they added three pieces. I think Jonathan Brooks should be very happy about that as well. Three veteran guys in the free agency market. Rod and Aaron, it feels like to me, if you're going to go draft a quarterback 1-1, you spend all that money that year on the offensive line rather than allowing them have the confidence shot and, the hits be taken for 18 straight weeks, basically. But they're figuring it out now. And I'm glad that's the case because, like you said, now that you have the franchise quarterback, you can build around him. You got a tight end, Jatavion Sanders. You got what they call the best running back in Jonathan Brooks. Now you see them, they're going to go feed them. You didn't spend a second round pick on a running back and a fourth round pick, first round or first overall of the third day on Jatavion Sanders, not to play them, not to get them involved. And I think that fall for Jatavion, I'm not going to get into the pro day or anything about the numbers or anything along the lines of that, but now that he's got an opportunity, I would be surprised if he's not coming in with a chip on his shoulder thinking, I just cost myself a good chunk of money because I wasn't prepared. Let's work to get that back, get back onto the right foot, and start my rookie campaign off with a bang. I think it's a good fit for him. Of course, they need playmakers
Yep.
anywhere across the field right now. What is it? 38-year-old Adam Thielen can't be the savior for the Panthers all throughout his career, no matter how long he tries. He's a great option, but it's a good opportunity for these guys to get involved early on in their career and see where that takes them with Bryce Young.
Yep. Yeah.
Xavier Leggett, too, the Leggett, the wide receiver from South Carolina in there. He's a big target, big body that they really like a lot. So, yeah, trying to put some pieces, and you were right about the free agency. Carolina, they'll be a bad team this year. They're not going to be a real contender in the AFC South, but you could see Jonathan Brooks emerging. And, Rod, you watch Dave Canales with Baker Mayfield, with Geno Smith. He's a really sharp offensive coordinator. Those two quarterbacks had their best years, and the running backs in that offense flourish as well. I'm excited to see Jonathan once he gets healthy.
Yeah, I think JT Sanders and Jonathan Brooks will be starting. Both will be starting for the Panthers by mid. Jonathan Brooks will be starting definitely whenever he gets healthy. He's their top running back, the future at that position for him. I think JT Sanders will be starting by mid season, his second year, or late in the season, his second year. They don't really have any great tight ends there. I think JT Sanders can separate. I think physically he probably is just a better overall player than the ones they have on the roster. He's got to learn how to be a pro, and his pass blocking and run blocking, he's got to work on those, but he's got all the raw materials. I think he'll end up being, you know, like say a starter for them by his second year. And I do think Dave Canales is a talented offensive mind too. He's had success everywhere he's gone. And not only that, the quarterbacks have gotten better. They're hoping that's the case with Bryce Young, but they're going to run the ball early and often. And Jonathan Brooks is going to get a ton of, when she's healthy, he's going to get a ton of targets and a ton of touches. They're going to wear him out in that offense with Dave Canales. I guarantee you that.
Agreed. All right, guys, we'll get some super chats here coming up. Do want to tell you that, speaking of coming up, Mother's Day. Mother's Day is Sunday, guys. Let's make sure we're paying attention to that. Rod, you've got a mother of your young baby for the first time. Congratulations. Mother's Day, and your mama, my mama, my mother of my kids as well. Mother's Day coming up. Maybe like me and Rod and everybody else, that woman in your life, you think, man, I wish I could find a personal jeweler. That would be great because they love jewelry, right? Well, that's where the CaretConcierge.com comes in. Jody Reynolds is a personal jeweler. She's your personal jeweler. This is a great thing. You can see some of her beautiful creations right here. Use the QR code on the screen to see even more. Visit her Instagram and her website. TheCaretConcierge.com is everything you want. It's what we think about. Man, I want help. I want help on this. She loves jewelry, earrings and necklaces and bracelets and rings and all of it. Well, that's where Jody, an Austin resident, a Texas fan, her husband listens to the On Texas Football podcast and the streams watching right now, prides herself in everything that's happening right now. It takes extra steps to make sure your lady gets exactly what she wants. And because she doesn't have the overhead of a storefront, she can get you higher quality, the inventory at lower prices for much as 30% less than what you're going to see at the jewelry store. So get on in there. Jody has a number of different tennis bracelets, rings, necklaces, and more. All beautiful jewelry, all personalized for you and yours. Check out the caretconcierge.com. You see it right there, the K-A-R-A-T, concierge.com. Visit her website, give her a call, text, and she'll take care of you. And that's someone special in your life. It's what you've always wanted, a personal jeweler to get you 30% off of what you get in the storefront and get you that perfect gift and walk you through it. The Carrot Concierge. Great stuff right there. Appreciate it. And then their sponsorship. Mother's Day is Sunday. Don't forget mom.
Yep.
It's a great way to do it. Great way to do it. Okay, here we go, guys. Wish casting a bit would wide receiver class of Moore, Lockett, and French be better than Roy, Sloan, BJ. Sark clearly trying to replicate the 2019 wide receiver room at Alabama.
I'll say this. I'm not going to talk about that class. I'll let you guys talk about it, but I don't think that's as far-fetched as it may have appeared a few months ago. Texas made big moves to Jamie French on his visit earlier in April. DeCorey Moore is going to be a fight. Ohio State feels like they're going to have an opportunity there. Of course, committed to LSU, but Texas is in a good spot for Kalik Lockett. Of course, looking good for Kelshon Johnson as well. So if you're looking at a four wide receiving group right now and that's your core, it's a pretty special group. I don't think it's too far-fetched at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Sark's got, first of all, you got elite quarterbacks here at Texas. You might have the best quarterback room in the country. So guys want to play with great quarterbacks. Not only that, they want to play with celebrity quarterbacks even more than the great quarterbacks. And you got both. You got Arch, who's a really good quarterback, but a celebrity quarterback. That'll help you recruit wide receivers. I'm sure he's also doing his part to help recruit those wide receivers because he wants to play and throw the football to great players. So I think that's going to help. And Sark's offense is a very wide receiver-friendly offense. And he's got a reputation now, starting to develop a damn good one, for putting wide receivers in the league, period, whether it's time at Bama or now his time here at Texas with three wide receivers drafted this year. So I think Sark wants that to become the norm and become a regular thing in his offense so that he can show whether you're a transfer portal acquisition at wide receiver or whether it's through traditional old school recruiting that he can develop you into being an NFL guy. And the truth is, man, you're not going to keep all these wide receivers, so you got to start stockpiling wide receivers too. I've been saying it for years. It is the deepest position in football at any level. And because of that, you can get really good wide receivers in the transfer portal. You can't, which means you can lose good wide receiving talent via the transfer portal. I mean, look at Texas. They got A.D. Mitchell in the transfer portal, Isaiah Bond in the transfer portal. You can get really good wide receiver talent there because it's such a deep position.
Interesting. I just don't think Sark's ever going to have a problem recruiting receivers based on everything you guys just said. Gosh, even the spring game becomes bombs away. I mean, with touchdown passes. I mean, I don't think that's by design, but at the same time, it looked pretty good for young recruits looking at that, going, "Oh man, they throw it all over the place. They're up and down and scoring a lot of points," which is interesting. So yes, it's a fun offense to play in, and Sark has a track record. I mean, there's just no doubt about that. I mean, the fact that A.D. Mitchell left the two-time national championship team in Georgia to come play at a more pass-friendly offense and ends up as a top 50 draft pick. Isaiah Bond leaving Alabama saying, you know, that's where my stock can rise and grow. That speaks volumes. And obviously having Arch Manning, behind Quinn Ewers is a quarterback room that you want to be a part of, you know, big picture. That's clear. I mean, where do you think this year's receiver class, CJ, stacks up with that receiver class that could be, and certainly the one we saw at Alabama back a couple of years ago with Sark calling plays for Nick Saban?
This is an interesting group, I think. I don't know who's going to be your guy, your number one guy. When you need a big play, Texas, I think, had two a year ago, more so Xavier Worthy than A.D. Mitchell, at least because he's been there for 3 years. You know, Sarkisian system, had an extra year with Quinn as well. Who's going to be your one guy? It's hard for me to tell. Right now, I had a conversation the other day with someone who's, you know, very much in the know, and was like, "Yeah, I think it's going to be Matthew Golden." I was like, "Wow, okay, that's a bit surprising." But, you know, he's a very well-rounded wide receiver. He's versatile. He can play inside and outside. He's a guy that at Houston last year, he was very much the underneath kind of protection guy that they use on crossers, the quick slants, you know, things behind the line of scrimmage, but also as the safety valve for the Houston quarterbacks. So I think right now, if that's going to be your guy, you should be okay with that. I think he's going to be a more involved Jordan Whittington for the Texas group this year. That's not to be a knock or anything, but you're going to have your deep ball guy in Isaiah Bond. You're going to have guys that can stretch the field the way that A.D. Mitchell did as well, whether that be Silas Bolden, though undersized, a great speed. You have great speed with Jonte Cook as well. So who's going to be that guy that you go to when you need a big play? Is it all of them? I don't know how often you see that where a quarterback doesn't have his one guy on drives and plays where he needs first downs or conversions. That's why I think it's going to be the underneath guy. I think it's going to be a guy inside that 15 to 20 yard range. You see connections all the time, maybe not so much in the 30-yard to 40-yard bombs where we'll see Isaiah Bond make his money. But I think it'll be Matthew Golden this year. So it'll be interesting. Of course, Ryan Wingo is going to figure into this somehow. How? I don't know. How much of a rein, how much of a leash does he have? I don't know. I'd be hard-pressed to not see him at all at some point this year because, again, he was just that good in the spring. But right now there's a lot of bodies that I think Sarkisian and his staff are still kind of tinkering on what the best rotation is, what the best personnel grouping is. Of course, how do Gunnar Helm and Namar and Iblack figure into this as well? But right now, Matthew Golden, a guy that's kind of rising on me a little bit at the moment.
Interesting.
I like that.
And, Rod, I know you on the Third and Longhorn podcast talked to Gunnar Helm recently. It's an array of weapons, but CJ's right. When you're playing a team like Michigan, week two, you're playing Georgia, Oklahoma, Brent Venables, you kind of have to have some go-to bread and butter guys that become the security blanket. You can have a lot of them, but you know, sometimes you know, you just have to have someone you trust. Who do you, as a former defensive player watching this, who do you think that might become? Is there any way to guess at this point, or does that just evolve as the season goes?
I do think it evolves as the season goes, but, I mean, Sark's going to force feed his guy. And Sark likes a receiver. I mean, look what Xavier Worthy, right? He's going to make sure that if he's got a guy that he believes is a game-changing playmaker, I will force feed that guy the football. Now, the question is, which one of these receivers does he believe is worth, you know, force feeding, you know, 8-9 targets because he knows, no, he's going to pop two of them. Now, two of those are going to be huge, big plays for us, whether it's a touchdown or whether it's a deep ball or whatever it may be. So that is – I'm not really sure who it is among this group. It could – because I can easily see it as CJ said. It could be Matthew Golden. I can see that. Look at his kick return ability. You get that guy in open field, and he is a problem. Isaiah Bonds, elite speed, right? World-class speed. We saw that Xavier Worthy. That's always a problem. And listen, Ryan Wingo, he might be the most talented, physically gifted receiver of all that bunch. But with Quinn, remember, a lot of times on third down, he was looking for JT Sanders a lot of times on third down. So I went on the money downs when you got to have it, a got to have it play. Who was Quinn looking for on that time? So I remember a lot of times it was JT Sanders who would make some of those contested catches on those big money downs. So for me, I think right now I'd go with Isaiah Bonds, the guy that Sark's going to – because Sark just – here at Texas, he's force-fed the football to a guy, and that's been Xavier Worthy. But then, you know, depending on the skill set of that secondary wide receiver, when they got A.D. Mitchell who could consistently beat man-to-man coverage, Sark would design the offense to get the defense to either roll coverage, rotate coverage, or use Xavier Worthy as a decoy. All right, to get them. Oh, you want to double them? All right, the safety can double them. You can double them. That's great because I just need to make sure A.D. Mitchell gets man-to-man because if A.D.'s a man-to-man, he's going to win. So it's not, a lot of times he would just engineer a man-to-man with A.D., and that would be sometimes at the expense of X-Man. And that was fine because this year because that's why A.D. Mitchell had such a great year because he can consistently beat man-to-man. This year you might get a situation like that where he finds out, all right, I got a guy that can beat man-to-man. All I do is engineer one-on-one with him. And if I can force feed the football to whatever, a receiver, maybe that's Isaiah Bond, I can get defense to respect him enough, and he'll have enough what they call gravity where he's attracting defenders constantly. And then with that, that'll open up space for other guys to make plays.
I love that. And we saw that a lot last year. I mean, you force feed a guy like Xavier Worthy, or if that becomes, you know, Isaiah Bond, Jonte Cook, who we'll see. But how many times, I mean, we just heard Dave Canales talking about Jonathan Brooks on a screen pass, like a throwback, right? You're going to have so much attention over here. Now I got a line of people in front of my running back, or Gunnar Helms running with no one on him down in the flat. That's the beauty of Sark. And that's part of the reason I think he does force feed to make sure, you know, he wants that defensive coordinator to think, okay, he's looking over here. We're gonna hit back this way. We'll get an open look that we want. Great, man. Thank you so much for the super chat. Appreciate you on a Tuesday. What's the new front seven scheme on defense? It won't be the same. What's the buzz? The spring game was not it.
Was not it.
I thought defensively, you know, attacking the run with that front seven, I thought it did its job for the most part. You know, it wasn't allowing those big 60-yard runs as we saw in the passing game, at least. You also didn't see much of Alfred Collins. Vernon Broughton wasn't even there. And, of course, Trey Moore wasn't too active after – or I guess he didn't participate at all. So three of your frontline guys weren't active. And so I do think that front seven will be better. We didn't see much of David Benda after the first couple of series either. And so a lot of the impact and big-time scoring that we saw was on guys that I don't necessarily think are going to be frontline guys for the Longhorns. Shoot, Terrence Brooks allowed the 75-yard touchdown on the first play of the game. He's already gone. I mean, so if you want to look at that front seven, I was actually encouraged by Tia Savea. I thought Sadir Mitchell had a good day. Alex January had some flashes in which I could certainly see him taking, you know, 8 to 10 snaps a game. Now, how much of those other guys – will you see continue to develop this summer? That's going to be very important. And, of course, I do think Texas goes out and adds a piece somewhere in that interior defensive line group. So right now, I'm not too much concerned with that group. I think it made strides. I think the additions helped it. At the end of the day, if Texas and Javion Cole can be that piece along with Gavin Holmes in the secondary, I'm comfortable overall with where the defense is. You don't need it to be elite. You don't need it to be top five. You just need it to be one score better than your opponents guarding whatever offense Texas deploys at the end of the day, which we know is going to be a very talented, high-flying offense with a lot of speed.
Yeah. And great man, you're right. Obviously, what you saw in the spring game was pretty vanilla. I mean, they're not going to reveal much in the spring game at all to give upcoming opponents any advantage. And I've been harping on this for a while, and I'm hoping that my theory's right. I think you're going to see some exotics, what I call exotics, just new looks outside of the norm and what traditional looks of PK are in the front seven because of the addition of Johnny Nansen. If you go look at Johnny Nansen, Arizona, man, he was one of the most creative and one of the most diverse and multiple defenses in all of college football. And a lot of the time, and this is my theory, is that this is why Sarkis has not really expressed a ton of concern over the secondary in the pass defense, because I think they believe they've upgraded in talent, but I believe he also believes he's upgraded somewhat in scheme. And that they're going to bring some very exotic looks to the table that are going to give them an advantage in pass defense, forcing opposing quarterbacks to have to process more pre-snap and post-snap, and also giving them more, like I said, more exotic looks that will make them hold on to the ball just a little bit longer to process it. And maybe those edge rushers, which Sark keeps talking about, that he's really excited about, they'll get home. And yes, the coverage will be a little bit tighter, but I think some of the more elaborate looks and some of the examples are when Johnny Nansen was at Arizona in 2022, when they were going up against San Diego State, they had a five down lineman package. They called the Joker package. They would spin down their one of their linebackers on the edge. Sound familiar? You can do that with Anthony Hill all day, every day, right? And when they faced Michael Penix and against Washington, and when they faced USC, he would sometimes use the 7DB package. It's called the quarters package in the NFL, but they called it, I believe, the dollar package. But he would play 7DBs, three down linemen, and one linebacker at times. It worked really well. Matter of fact, Michael Penix didn't throw a touchdown against him, and Caleb Williams at the time threw for his season low against Arizona. So they looked really good against some of the most high-powered offenses in the country and some of the best quarterbacks in the country. Against Washington State, also, you know, really good offense. They ran the flex alignment, old-school Arizona. I'm talking about double eagle flex, desert swarm defense, old-school stuff. And against Oregon State, they ran – and Cam Ward, by the way, was a quarterback for Washington State, one of the better quarterbacks in college football, and he had one of his worst games of the season. And against Oregon State, they ran a 3-4. They ran a 4-2-5. I even saw him run some three high safety defense against Oregon State. So he just threw a ton of different concepts and exotic looks at opposing offenses. You never knew week to week what the hell you were going to get from that Arizona defense. Just because you studied them and studied their trends and patterns, you didn't know what you were going to get that next week. And really the only one of the ways you can do that is with high IQ football players, veteran football players. I think they have some of those now in the secondary to show some of those different looks. So I think in the front seven, that's what you may get this year. You may get more exotic looks from that Johnny Nansen influence. That's what I'm hoping anyway.
Good stuff, guys. As usual, the On Texas Football Tuesday live stream brought to you by Texas Electricity Ratings. And again, if you live in one of the deregulated cities of the great state that is, where you can, you know, find your own electricity, you just need to understand it, right? That's really your goal. Make sure you pick and find the right electricity for you and your family. It can be very confusing, a lot of options, a lot of different, you know, things thrown at you. That's where Texas Electricity Ratings and TexasElectricityRatings.com is the shopping website for you. It allows you to compare prices, read actual customer reviews, folks who are using the electricity, and then find a good electricity company that fits your needs and a plan that fits your needs. Also filters out those gimmicky plans that you don't want to be messing around with. It's going to confuse you. Websites like Power to Choose, that's going to trick you into expensive bills, and you don't want that at all. Obviously, you're in a deregulated area. You have an advantage. You're trying to find the one that's best for your family, and that's where TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF on Texas football. That's the way to do it. They're great partners of ours here on the Tuesday live stream and all the time here on OTF. It's TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for all of your electricity needs. And we appreciate them again on a Tuesday night, bringing you the live stream and good conversations, talking to Portal, if you're just tuning in here and viewing for the first time late in the program, Austin Jordan, the former Longhorn, now committing to TCU. CJ was up in the Temple, Belton, Killeen area today making road trips. More road trips coming, Siege?
Oh, yeah. Out at Pflugerville tomorrow and then making a stop down to Bastrop. Bastrop's got a 2027 quarterback, Weston Nielsen, who was on campus three times this spring. We'll be back for the June Elite Camp, June 1st. And, of course, Tiki Hola, the 2026 interior defensive lineman, who might be the best interior defensive lineman in the entire state of Texas. So I'll be checking the two of them out and then up to Waxahachie Thursday. They got a couple cats in the younger classes. And then we're checking out Riley Pettijohn on Friday in his spring game. So all over the state of Texas, headed north, got to go see mom for Mother's Day. Of course, spend some good time up there.
Yeah, nice.
Happy Mother's Day to her and to all the moms out there. And to Rod, to your lovely bride and her first Mother's Day. It'll be great. I know tomorrow on Coffee and Football, Jerry's in Florida, right? Is he going to be joining from the Gator State? Is that going to be happening, Sunshine State?
Oh, he's been all over the map. So he's he made the stop with Jamie French earlier. Of course, saw Brandon Brown today. I know he's put good updates over on Texas Football. He's got some good one-on-one videos, about 8 to 10 minutes, with a couple of these big-time recruits, seeing Myron Charles as well. So be sure to go check those out. I know Jerry's putting in the miles on the southeastern tip of the United States, and he's a guy that's not going to stop anytime soon. So good stuff coming up.
Nice.
And maybe, CJ, before we wrap this thing tonight, you have a piece of breaking news that's come in?
Yeah, so I mentioned earlier Texas was looking to add to its interior defensive line room. Maybe not so much with a frontline guy, but a guy that they can continue to build and mold over the couple of years, just to ensure that there's depth and there's bodies and there's guys that will continue to contribute down the road in their Texas career. A familiar name here, Johnny Bowens, is expected to visit Texas. He's setting up a visit with Texas. He's out of Judson Converse, or Converse Judson, excuse me. His final three came down to Texas, Texas A&M, and Oregon out of high school. He ended up at Oregon, now in the transfer portal. No official visit has been set just yet, but he did mention to me earlier this evening that he is hoping to make it down to Austin at some point for a visit with the Texas staff. That's someone that Texas would take and hopefully build into that room when it comes to just keeping sure that there are bodies. Of course, we mentioned earlier tonight, four guys expected to depart out of this group after this season: Tia Savea, Bill Norton, Vernon Broaden, Alfred Collins. Got to keep that room and those bodies going. So that's a name that Texas fans should be familiar with at the moment, is Johnny Bowens out of Converse Judson and out of Oregon as well.
Nice. All right, great stuff. That's why you tune in. That's why the information keeps flowing all through May into June, certainly tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock with Coffee and Football. And the conversation never stops on the On Texas Football channel. Excited to see that the subscribers jumped over 45,000 now. Recently, which is crazy. Appreciate, keep sending it and sharing it and running into folks all over that are watching the shows every Tuesday and all the shows on Texas Football. Great to see and appreciate everybody being there. Guys, awesome stuff. I know we're all back at it tomorrow doing our thing, but it's good to check in with you guys. Happy Mother's Day to everybody coming up on Sunday. I'll be back next Tuesday, and you guys have a good one. And Coffee and Football tomorrow, 8 o'clock. Thank you to Matthew for all the help and all the super chats and everybody that made this possible tonight. We had a good time.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in.
Welcome.